Explaining the tides. The moon designed to serve mankind. Source. No one would quarrel with the fact that there is a relationship between what the moon does and what the tides do. The Bible, after all, says that the moon was designed to serve mankind through signs, which could certainly include tidal phenomena, and through seasons, and by giving light. However, to say there is a relationship or connection between the moon and tides is one thing. To say that the moon causes and controls Earth's tides, as the whole world has been taught as a scientific fact, is quite another thing. In the first instance, since God has said that one of his purposes for making the moon and having it behave as it does is precisely for man's aid in such things as gauging tides, planting, harvesting, etc., we see the relationship as supernatural. These are signs and they have always worked and they work now for those who read them. Thus, there is a relationship or connection between the moon's behavior and supplying useful and necessary knowledge for man. In the second instance, however, since science has said it will explain everything in natural terms without God and will designate all supernatural explanations as superstitions held by unenlightened people, we find that the obvious connections between the moon's behavior and certain phenomena such as tides must be explained naturalistically by the science establishment. So, God gave his supernatural explanation for tides, which man has rejected. In its stead, man has come up with a purely naturalistic explanation for the tidal phenomena. In short, man's science has declared that the moon's gravitational pull, assisted by the sun's pull, causes the tides. This declaration is now counted as a fact of science. Vern, one of these explanations is the truth and one is a lie. Let's see if we can find out which is which. First, let us look at some facts and see where they take us logically. For instance, there is a real fact about a neutral gravity zone between the Earth and the moon. I quote from a letter from NASA dated April 5, 1990 addressing this matter. On a direct line from the Earth to the Moon, equal gravitational effects would be found at approximately 216,000 miles, given a mean distance of 240,000 miles between the two bodies. 20 mph. Added. Other sources confirm this understanding. Figures 14 and 15, reproduced in book only, are taken from one of famed rocket scientist Wernher von Braun's books. They illustrate this neutral gravity zone. Okay. So all we are describing here is something that must logically be true if the statistics about the Earth and Moon gravitational pulls are fairly accurate. Earth's gravity is said to be 6 times as strong as the Moon's gravity, or said the other way, the Moon's gravitational attraction is 1/6 or about 17% that of Earth's gravity. Somewhere between the two bodies, the pull of one body has got to be overcome by the pull of the other one. At this point, which NASA says and von Braun confirms averages circa 216,000 miles from the Earth, there is a neutral gravity zone where the Earth's gravitational pull becomes weaker than the Moon's gravitational pull and, at this same point, the Moon's gravitational pull becomes weaker than the Earth's gravitational pull. This circumstance is demanded by the gravity concept and all the supposed facts and laws that describe the Earth and Moon gravitational fields. Okay, Vern? Now keep that in mind as we read what science says about tides on Earth. What science says is that the moon's gravitational pull reaches out through the neutral gravity zone, where it couldn't attract a balloon full of feathers, a dead horse, or the Astrodome, and goes on beyond 50,000, 100,000, 216,000 miles and sucks the big ol' Earth toward it like stretching a rubber ball. I know it's incredible, I know it's insane, but that's what the naturalistic, i.e., scientific, explanation demands that the moon must do. Read it for yourself from these examples, which are repeated in every book on the subject. Strange as it may seem, yeah, what we normally think of as the solid body of the Earth is also affected by the moon, so that it too, the Earth, that is, has a tide. The landmass of the Earth is elastic and actually rises and falls about 4.5 inches. We do not feel these land tides, but they do take place. 23 mph. Added. In his book, The Lunar Effect, author Lieber says, the pull of the moon distorts the Earth as if it were a rubber ball. The North American continent may rise so much as a foot when the moon is overhead. 24. The famous science writer Asimov says, the Earth, so to speak, is stretched in the direction of the moon. The solid Earth does not stretch much, however, only about 9 inches on each side, and only delicate measurements can show this stretch. 25. He's lying about the delicate measurements, of course. No measurement shows this, and what the others said, or could show it. Mathematical decorations derived from and supportive of this crazy hypothesis might show a 9 stretch, twice what the other guy just said, but no measurement has or can show it. In a kid science book we read, "Now the land of the earth does not move easily, but the waters do. The waters on the side of the earth closest to the moon pile up in a bulge, causing a high tide. But at the same time there is a high tide on the other side of the earth. What do you suppose is the reason for this?" The answer is that, as the moon's gravity pulls the water nearest to it a little away from the earth, it also pulls the whole earth a little away from the waters in the ocean on the farthermost side, setting up a second high tide there. 26. In The Moon, Earth's Natural Satellite, author Branly says the same thing in explaining his diagram on the tidal phenomena, the ocean at E, the furthermost from the moon, because it is so much farther away is not pulled toward the moon as much as the solid earth, the earth is pulled away from the water, and the water is therefore deeper during this part of the tidal cycle. 27. Mth. Added. Branly then gets into some numbers which grow out of the myth he believes, numbers so contradictory as to be comical if the world weren't mesmerized by this deception. The tide-raising force of the moon is very small indeed, compared to the force of gravity. The tide-raising force of the moon is about 1/9000th, that of the Earth's gravity. 28. Wow. 1/9000000th, let's see, that means the Earth's pull toward its own center on its own crust and oceans and seas is 9 million times as great as the moon's pull on the same features, doesn't it? 9 million to 1. Phew. Amazing, isn't it, that 9 million mule power could be pulling something one way and 1 mule power could overcome all that every hour of every day and stretch the Earth and cause zillions of cubic feet of water to shift around everywhere. Yes, just amazing, especially when that 1 mule power stopped out there at the 216,000-mile neutral gravity zone. Mamma mia. Well, it would take a book to get into all the nutty theories that rest upon the central idea that the moon's gravity reaches out with ghostly fingers beyond its own backyard across another 216,000 miles of Earth's gravity's backyard and stretches a body with 81 times its own mass and 50 times its volume like a blob of dough. 29. Part and parcel of this nonsense is the tidal friction goofiness spawned by Charles Darwin's son, Sir George Darwin. This concept says that the tidal movements cause friction against the rotating Earth and have been slowing it down about 1/1000th of a second per century, for some 5 billion, that's B as in Bill, years. 30. Another author dealing with the same subject figures about 14 seconds a century for the slowdown. Anyway, Sir George figured this on back to where the Earth was spinning around every 5 hours or so and the moon was so close you could kick it. However, all this tidal friction slowed the Earth down over those billions of years to the present 24-hour, 1,037 miles per hour speed, and somehow or other caused the moon to recede to its present distance. George didn't stop there, but figured this on into the future, concluding that after billions of years, Earth will require 47 days to make a rotation and the moon will require 47 days to go around the Earth. 31. For this concept, no more or less screwy and unscientific than his daddy Charles' evolution concept, Georgie is in the Scientists' Little League Hall of Fame in any book you pick up on the subject and was knighted Sir to boot. Makes one wonder who's in charge of this world system of recognition and so forth, doesn't it? The Bible says, of course, that Satan the deceiver is allowed to be god of this world until he is removed forever, 2 Cor 4:4. If that be true, then it is perfectly understandable why the individuals who advance Satan's deceptions in the world would frequently be important figures in all aspects of that world system. See Histrev. Then there is that part of the gravity causes tides looniness which brings in the sun's gravitational effect. This tells how the sun's gravity both assists and counteracts the moon's pull to produce spring tides and neap tides which come about a week apart. The same principles apply. And then there is the supposed effect of the moon's gravity on the Earth's atmosphere. And on and on. It would take a book, Byrne, am I telling you? Nevertheless, it hasn't escaped the attention of any reader, I'm sure, who has come this far, hello, that the vast eons of time required for all this cosmic buffoonery to transpire fit hand in glove with that other master myth of modern history, evolutionism. Time is the hero of both of these plots. Both of these myths have the same author. Both have the same future, namely exposure and destruction by the truth of God in the coming fall of Babylon. More on that in another place. But just to make sure that all this earth stretching to cause tides concept is understood to be an integral, necessary part of the whole naturalistic, humanistic, heliocentric wisdom and knowledge where tides are concerned, let's look at one more example. And believe it or not, Vern, I stumbled upon this gem in the Bird Lovers magazine, Audubon, for September 1989. It was an essay entitled Pull of the Moon. In it, author Steinhardt incorporates the conventional wisdom about tides in a way that speaks volumes about how deeply this myth has penetrated. There was plenty of reason for ancients to worship the moon. The moon exerts a profound influence upon the earth. As it passes overhead, its gravitational force pulls a bulge of seawater, causing the high tides. As it lines up with or opposite the sun, at the times of the new or full moons, the tides are highest. It even pulls a bulge in the earth as it passes. Moscow rises 20 inches twice a day. And at times the Empire State Building is 63 feet closer to the Eiffel Tower. Because it tugs harder on whatever is closer, it pulls the earth more than it pulls the water on the far side of the earth. So there is a bulge of water on the backside of the globe to a second daily high tide. 32, Env. Added. Well, enough examples. In simple terms, as part of the worldwide indoctrination into heliocentricity, there had to be a mechanism to explain the motions of the heavenly bodies, what keeps them in their places, and so on. That explanation, that mechanism is called the law of universal gravitation. It is credited to Newton but was first formulated by Kepler, as we've seen. This universal law of gravitation is taught and believed by one and all but is, nevertheless, an absolutely insane concept which violates and contradicts its essential magnetic principle every second of every day, year in, year out. Even if one can momentarily lock one's brain into conceiving of a delicate balance between the Earth and the Moon's gravitational forces, a balance that would be achieved by the most precise, exact and unvarying distance between the two bodies, then that same brain is boggled when it is confronted with the fact that no such stable distance exists between these two bodies, or any other two. Indeed, the undeniable reality is that the Moon regularly varies its distance from the Earth by over 31,000 miles. When it comes closer and closer, it gets in the stronger and stronger pull of Earth's gravity. How can it then resist that pull and start going against that attraction? Contrarywise, as it goes out to the apogee and is moment by moment breaking loose from Earth's gravitational pull at tremendous speed, how can it stop the outward movement and start back? Gravity doesn't explain this. Gravity can't explain it. Gravity doesn't explain the tides. Gravity can't explain them. The same is true of the Earth's supposed annual orbit around the Sun. The simple fact is that we are closer by 3 million miles to the Sun at certain times than we are at other times. The gravitation explanation for heavenly bodies doing what they do has no scientific evidence whatsoever behind it.
It is pure nonsense from A to Z, a contradictory, illogical, impossible notion perpetrated upon the world by you know who to discredit the Bible.
Indeed, universal gravitation is a bankrupt and stupid hypothesis incapable of explaining tides, just the same as Darwin's natural selection mechanism is now being recognized as a bankrupt and stupid hypothesis that is incapable of explaining evolutionism. These bankrupt hypotheses both have the same author, Satan the Deceiver. They both have the same purpose, undermining the credibility of Scripture. They both have the same destiny, exposure as lies to be adhered to only by those who cannot receive a love of the truth, 2 Thessalonians 2:10, i.e., those who willfully embrace these lies when they know better, 2 Peter 3:5, by those, in short, whose real God is the father of lies, John 8:44. Shall we gravitate to another topic, Vern, old chap? By all means, Bobo, if you can but cease with these weightless attempts at levity. I'll try. Note, an overview of the electric sun model, which explains attractive and interactive phenomena in the universe much more sensibly than the gravity model. Bibliography.
Number 20, Brian Dunbar, Public Affairs Officer, Office of Space Service and Applications, NASA, Washington, D.C., April 5, 1990.
Number 21, Wernher von Braun, First Men to the Moon, Holt, Reinhardt and Winston, New York, 1960. Page 36 and inside cover. Number 22, Ibid. Number 23, Carol V. Glines, Colonel USAF.
The First Book of the Moon, Franklin Watts Incorporated, NY, NY, 1967, p. 21. Number 24, Arnold L. Lieber, The Lunar Effect, Anchor Press, Doubleday, Garden City, NY, 1978, jacket cover.
Number 25,
Isaac Asimov, The Double Planet, Abelard Schumann, London. NY, Toronto, 1960, p. 100. Number 26, Gene and Clay Kinney, What Do the Tides Do? Young Scott, Pub, 1966, p. 32. Number 27, Franklin M. Branly, The Moon, Earth's Natural Satellite, Thomas E. Crowell Company, 1960, p. 84. Number 28, Ibid, p. 85. Number 29, Ibid, p. 82. Number 30, Ibid, p. 86. Number 31, Ibid. Number 32, Paul Steinhardt. Full of the Moon, Audubon, September, 1989, p. 32.